We are on the scene. This is National Bugle Radio. This is going to be a special show. I'm Patrick Slattery, and I will be joined today by Professor Kevin McDonald. Professor McDonald, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here, Patrick.
Well, it's so good to have you back on the show. This is the first time you've been, well, I guess you were on it when I was substituting for Farron Schoaf on Saturday evenings. It's the first time you've been on with me in this time slot. There's been so much going on. I just want to ask you a kind of generic question first. I remember early 2015, you were on David Duke's show, and this is early 2015, before Trump had announced his candidacy, and you sounded really pessimistic about the future. Now, in these intervening almost 3 years, lots of things have happened. Trump was elected. Then there's been all of these Charlottesville-type events. And I don't know, I mean, do we look at these positively or negatively? Do we look at the awakening of our people or the clampdown that the Jewish power structure is attempting?
Well, yeah, that's great. When I, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, I was really starting to sort of lose faith that we would ever, you know, make a breakthrough and get some attention for our ideas. There just didn't seem to be any way out. We're completely frozen out of the mainstream media. We had, you know, some web broadcasts and so on, but, you know, we just weren't reaching people. But, you know, then when Donald Trump, ran for president, I really changed. I was very, very optimistic. And then, you know, people, because the media hated him so much, there was constant criticism of Donald Trump, and they were linking him to the alt-right, Steve Bannon, Nazi, all these portrayals of Trump as a Nazi, as, a horrible racist, misogynist, and everything. And, you know, so that actually brought us attention. Hillary Clinton famously gave a speech, talked about the alt-right, mentioned, all these people being, all Trump supporters being deplorables and all that. And so it really got attention. Now that Trump's elected, you know, I'm certainly, I remain hopeful. I mean, he's really done a lot of sort of missteps, you know. I mean, I don't know why he's arguing with people like Tillerson and his administration, calling, you know, back and forth about morons and stuff. I mean, it's unprecedented in my experience. Now his battle with Corker, and there's one after another. At the same time, he's doing some good things. I think his stance with the NFL and the kneeling for the flag is going to be popular. I think he's not going to lose it at that one. In fact, he's already pretty much won it. The NFL is changing their tune, but I'm very still encouraged by his proposals on immigration. I mean, if there's going to be a deal on DACA, you know, it's going to involve, you know, the end of chain migration, strict limits, you know, meritocratic system, and so on. So it's very encouraging, you know, that he's really trying to do this. But at the same time, we're a long ways away, because of these Republicans in Congress. I mean, Steve Bannon gave a great interview on Hannity the other night, and he was just on a warpath against these Republicans like Corker and so many of them. They're establishment Republicans. They're tied into the corporate media structure. They are free traders. They love immigration. They completely cucked when it comes to anything like race. And they're probably not even going to support him on immigration, much less anything like the Affordable Care Act. And I do think that there's a personal animosity that's going on here with some of these senators, like McCain. I think McCain voted against the Health Care Act just because of spite, just hatred for Trump. And Corker probably do the same when it comes to tax reform or other things. I mean, it's such a poisonous atmosphere. I've never seen anything like it. But Trump cannot get the Republican majority. Everybody figured, well, Republican majority, House and Senate, what can go wrong here? We're going to really, you know, change the world. But it didn't happen, and it's stuck in the mud. One crisis after another, investigations, the Russia nonsense. it's just it's very depressing. So, but the fact is, we have gotten, you know, we're still getting attention, and to a certain extent, I think it's less so than during the campaign, but we're sort of on the radar now with the Charlottesville thing, and there was another one the last weekend. So, you know, we're sort of in the mix now a little bit, and people are having to take us a little more seriously, even though, you know, they never cease their condemnation. They never cease calling us white supremacists, as if that's a sort of non-loaded objective term. So I'm sort of encouraged, but it's certainly glass half full at best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a political scientist, I've been amazed at the types of tricks that they've been able to use to prevent President Trump from exercising any kind of executive authority, you know, having the courts strike down his immigration ban, all of this nonsense about Russia, which has bogged down his foreign policy, so many things. I want to ask you something else. You know, you've done, in my estimation, more intellectual work than anyone else, revealing the hostile nature of the Jewish elite that dominates our society. And, you know, in particular, when I come across doubters, I just ask them, if you're not going to read anything else, read the chapter in Culture of Critique on immigration. And I can't tell you how many people that has woken up. Yet there was an article in The New Yorker asserting that the Culture of Critique has been debunked by mainstream social scientists. Well, maybe mainstream is the key word there. What are they talking about?
The fact is, it hasn't been. The most amazing thing about Culture of Critique is there haven't been any negative reviews. There have been hardly any reviews at all. The only real review, there's one by Frank Salter, very positive. One by John Derbyshire, who's also, you know, reasonably positive with some reservations and so on. And, you know, first of all, John Derbyshire is not even a social scientist. He's a blogger, basically. Frank Salter is a social scientist. So the only social scientist who's ever reviewed it liked it, said good things about it, said that the people who had rejected my work, John Tooby and Steve Pinker, had a professional responsibility to actually review my book. The fact is that Steve Pinker rejected all my arguments, but he said he didn't read the book. It was just, and the same with Tooby. He's never read the book. They never criticized it. There have been no reviews like that. So I've been going back and forth with the author of that article, and I do plan to, you know, seek some kind of redress on this. I'm demanding a retraction because there just hasn't been any mainstream scientists, or, you know, you can go on Amazon and find a lot of reviews, but they're not by social scientists, as far as I know. There's probably hundreds of reviews there. But the point is that, you know, this guy is just plugging into a sort of zeitgeist. I've been corresponding with him on Twitter on the direct message thing. And, you know, he includes something like this article from the Southern Poverty Law Center about me being a bad person. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center is not mainstream social scientists. They are a very much of a very biased advocacy organization. So I'm really angry about this, and I'm not going to let it go. I have this on Twitter, I have this daily reminder that this guy should either support, his name is Marantz, Andrew Marantz, he should either support or retract his statement that Culture of Critique was roundly debunked by mainstream social scientists. It's an outrage.
And it's funny you mentioned Steven Pinker, who he was at Harvard. I think, has he gone on to Columbia now? He's a Canadian Jew with a giant blonde Jewfro. He's been famous for that for years. And he's always fed it. He's given such a welcome everywhere. Well, sometimes he's accused of being maybe right-wing racist because he talks about IQ. But to the extent he talks about IQ, it's about how high Jewish IQ is. And, and he'll quote figures that are way above what anything that's been measured. I mean, he'll talk about 117 average IQ. And then something that I don't think there's any backing for, that they have a very there's a very large standard deviation in the Jewish population, which, you know, if you're having an IQ of like maybe 120 and then at this really large standard deviation, it might partially explain their high rates of enrollment at the very elite university. You know, if you say Harvard's the top university, but you couldn't use the same data then to say, well, why are they also have so widely or so grossly overrepresented at the rest of the Ivy League and at Duke and at, you know, GW and all of these other lesser tier schools where they're just as overrepresented. If it was just an issue of their, you know, a large standard deviation, it wouldn't work that way. Here's the question. We just have all these revelations coming out in Hollywood about Harvey Weinstein, and you've got people like Matt Damon and Ben Affleck who apparently have been facilitating and covering up for Harvey Weinstein as he abuses and rapes white actresses. And in academia, I mean, isn't there the same thing going on? You think of, for instance, Harvard Law School, for instance. You've got these goy like Senator Elizabeth Warren, who was there. And she saw everything that was going on. She was there when Elena Kagan was appointing all of these, you know, more than half of her appointments were Jews. And she saw all this. And so you got these people who just cover up. So isn't academia just as bad as Hollywood in terms of covering up the abuse? And maybe it's not the abuse of raping white actresses, but it's really, you know, raping or trying to repeal and replace white people in this country.
I totally agree. It's a very bad situation in the academic world. The fact is that Senator Warren, you know, got her position at Harvard because she claimed she was a Native American. And it was ridiculous. You know, she didn't have any proof of that. Just an assertion. She put it on her veto. She took it off when she got tenure. You know, this is the kind of person that is getting to the top of our society. These are people with no scruples, no ethics, and of course they're perfectly willing to see whites and their culture and their whole civilization go down the drain as long as they have a nice position. And so someone like that. Their position is reinforced by these Jews. I mean, they see people coming who are, you know, on board with their agenda, and they promote them, and they will continue to do that. So it's not just Jews; it's the people who are put in positions where they have influence because they're on board with this basic agenda. I mean, I've often written about like with the neoconservatives, the big success of the neoconservatives was they provided this big infrastructure. So if you were not Jewish and you wanted a career writing about foreign policy or social issues, that was the place to go. You know, there was a good career, a good job, and all you had to do was say positive things about Israel and the Middle East and wars and all that. And if you were non-Jewish, all the better, because then, hey, it's not just Jews. We got all these other people. So, that's the problem that we face. It's just a massive infrastructure, whether it's in the academic world, where, you know, with university presidents. I was just looking at this video where this president of the University of Florida was commenting on Richard Spencer. And, you know, I look him up and he's making over $1 million a year. And you know, he's not a Jewish guy. He's a white guy, but he's making over $1 million a year. And a big part of his job is, you know, combating people like Richard Spencer, hating the alt-right, calling us all just nutcases and racists and all that. So that's how to sort of get ahead in this society now. All the rewards are on the side of, you know, selling out our people and our culture. This war against white people is, I've written about this, I use the phrase massively incentivized. There are massive incentives for people to do this. Huge salaries, sinecures, positions in the media, talking heads, politicians. I mean, all these Republicans in Congress who are just so cucked on things like race and everything. But they're successful people. They're making a lot of money. They're all millionaires. They're all you know, influential. They have a lot of fans and all of that. I mean, you know, it's a great life, you know, and it feeds into our worst instincts. You know, the problem with individualists, and we tend to be individualists, and there's a lot of good things about individualism. But the bad thing is that you don't have a sense of group interest, and you don't care about much of anything but yourself in a lot of situations. And so we've sort of forgotten about our people, so many of us. Mm-hmm.
And that individualism wouldn't matter if we were living in a country that was relatively homogeneous and populated by individualists.
Absolutely. That is it. If you are in a homogeneously European, Northern European country that tends towards individualism, that's great. You have huge social dynamism, you know, and you know, entrepreneurship and scientific discovery and all that. And you have, you know, you have a society that where there's high trust. You know, you don't have all this bribing of officials. Just saw this article about Latin America and the Caribbean, where, you know, bribery is a way of life. You can't even get public services without paying bribes to government officials. That's what these non-individualistic societies are about. We've always been about high trust, about, you know, transparency and so on. And that's great, but the problem is, you know, you get all these people, like, yeah, I think of Bill Clinton as the paradigm there. I mean, mm-hmm. they're just completely corrupt, but they're having a great career and a great life.
And you find them in every industry. So, you know,
yep,
politics.
In every industry. And so many of our corporate CEOs are on board with that. They know that they can't say anything or do anything that would upset this consensus on race and immigration and everything. They know they can't do that because they will lose their job. There'll be all kinds of pressure put on the board of directors or whatever. Same with politicians. They know that there won't be any money. There's suddenly a huge media against them, demands that they resign. I mean, that's what they're facing here. All the incentives are on selling us out. All the rewards are all the incentives are, to sell our people. All the rewards are for selling us out, and all the punishments are for standing up for what's right.
Mm-hmm. So you think of the richest people, and Sheldon Adelson has claimed to be the richest Jew, and he is certainly somebody who's not shy about openly and aggressively pushing what he sees as Jewish interests. Some Jews might have problems with him because he's so open and so overt. And you think of somebody like George Soros, who doesn't specifically talk about them as Jewish interests, but they are. It's the Jewish agenda, the, you know, open borders, multiculturalism, all of that. And, you know, or even Mark Zuckerberg, who he's not married to a Jew. He might not be as ethnocentric as the rest, but Facebook is part of this effort to, you know, it's a monopoly, and it shuts out discussions that would reveal the truth about what's going on. And yet our own, not the non-Jewish billionaires, what does Microsoft's Bill Gates do? While he was the richest man in the world, he tries to bolster the African population as much as possible. Has he tried to do anything for white interests? No. Has he done a lot of things that would be contrary to white interests? I would think so. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I think again, there's
oh, and we seem to be
rewards
going
for doing those.
Break.
What's that?
But maybe you can answer that as soon as we come back for the break.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation. and Angioprim is the result, a safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
We are back. This is National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery, and today I am talking to Professor Kevin McDonald. And I was asking, what is going on in this country? I was asking you a question just when we went to break. We had a little bit of confusion during the break. Do you remember your train of thought? I was just asking, what this all this craziness?
There's a huge amount of repression going on, and I think that because we have gotten some attention, there's more and more repression in a whole lot of areas. PayPal has shut off a number of accounts, including the Asshole Quarterly that I edit. I have really no idea why they did that. They don't tell you why they do it; they just do it. Certain websites have been shut down. I think Don Black's daily
Stormfront.org. Yeah,
they got. So they have to make all these arrangements to get around that. And I think Alt-Right was shut down for a while. They're back up. It's just and certainly with Red Ice, they got hacked and it's just a mess for them. I think they're still trying to recover from that. It's a bad situation. And, Andrew Joyce, who's a really important writer, I have my Occidental Observer all the time and Occidental Quarterly. He was going to come to the United States to actually have a conference with Richard Spencer about publishing his book and other books. He got to the, just before he went to the airport, they said he couldn't come to the United States. I mean, this is the level of you know, repression that's going on at this point, and who knows what's next. But you know, they don't tell you why when they do these things, which we all know why. It's because these ideas are poisonous to them, and they know that these ideas are too powerful to just, you know, say, oh, they're crazy or something like that. They're just you know, bigots or something. That's not enough anymore. Call it the word racist, and so it has lost its sting, you might say, because it's overused, to say the least. But so yeah, I think there's a real fear on the part of the establishment that they're losing control of this thing.
Yeah, and I was mentioning earlier, as a political scientist, I've never seen so many obstacles thrown up to, for instance, President Trump and his ability to exercise the powers of the office of the presidency, and even his. Even his inauguration, they were trying to block it through whether it would be through cajoling or bribing electors not to vote for him, or to try to wreck the counting of the votes on January 6th that would actually certify his election by any means necessary. And you're finding that by any means necessary type of I'd like to think it's desperation in the means that you're just talking about. And you mentioned Andrew Joyce being refused entry into the country. And you've mentioned the financial things, PayPal. Now, that's all corporate. When PayPal and YouTube kicks people off or demonetizes them, that's corporate, but it's Jewish corporate power. Andrew Joyce, was the State Department that rejected.
That is a good point, and Andrew didn't mention that, and he's got an article in Oxford Observer right now, but that is a very good point, that this was a governmental action, had to be a governmental action, and I assume it had to be by the United States government.
It was.
I don't see how the British government could prevent one of their citizens from going there, although, you know, certainly the British government has done that kind of thing in the past and continue to do it. Recently, Mark Weber wanted to he had to transfer to a plane in London from Madrid. They refused him entry just to transfer an airplane. So he had to rebook, cost him a lot of money. It's outrageous what's going on here. But you're right, it's a governmental action. And if the United States government is involved, that's a First Amendment violation, clearly, because that's the United States government. It's all about free speech, obviously.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection, U.S. Department of Homeland Security. This is where he got the travel not authorized notification. We'll be back again after the break with more.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Professor McDonald, and we touched on it in the first half hour, touched on Harvey Weinstein a little bit, but it's so much in the news now. And what's fascinating, you do have people like Sean Hannity who are talking about it and saying, well, he's getting away with this because he's a liberal. But Tablet Magazine, which is a magazine, I guess it's online, I don't know if they have a print edition, but it's a major outlet for Jews, by Jews. It's Jews writing for other Jews. And they have an article by a Mark Oppenheimer, which certainly sounds like a Jew to me, and this is a magazine by Jews for Jews. And the title of the article is "The Specifically Jewy Perviness of Harvey Weinstein." And then the subtitle, "The Disgraced Film Producer is a character straight out of Philip Roth playing out his revenge fantasies on the Goyim." So what is it? I know you've read the article. What is it that is so Jewy about Harvey Weinstein? This isn't just a guy who had a big libido and wanted to have sex with a lot of women. What is so specifically Jewy about this?
Well, in the article, the guy explicitly says that Harvey Weinstein was motivated by revenge. You know, all the women that he abused and harassed and raped were not Jewish. Almost all of them, probably, and maybe all of them. This is an important theme. of Jewish psychology, Jewish history. In Culture Critique, and in Chapter 3, I talk about the revenge fantasy. I talk about Jews and the left. And I was personally involved in this at University of Wisconsin in the 60s with Jews on the left. And you have this hatred. And I have some other sources talking about their hatred towards non-Jewish society. They're wanting to destroy it. And when I reviewed Yuri Slesman's book, the Jewish Century, that theme came up again. He talked about it. He talked about his desire for revenge against the old order, seen as oppressive, seen as anti-Semitic. And so they want to take it down. They want to destroy it. And there was one particular vignette where he talked about this guy who had approached some non-Jewish woman. He was Jewish, and he wanted to date or wanted to get involved with some non-Jewish woman, and she rejected him before the revolution. Well, then after the revolution, he became his deputy commissar, and she was working in a brothel, and he came, and he just had sex with her with his boots on, his pistol and everything. It was just like complete degradation, and that's the hatred towards the, and it's the same thing that Portnoy is talking about in Philip Roth, this hatred towards the shiksa, because they're the unattainable. They would not, perhaps want to go out with Jews, if not date them. That's changed, by the way. I mean, so many of these women, because Jews are now very powerful, and because they are, so many of them are rich, famous celebrities, part of the elite, women are attracted to that. And for all the women that are not coming out and talking about harassment, you wonder how many more women must have just gone along with it, because, hey, that's the way to get ahead in the world. Mm-hmm. You do that. And the same with men. John Travolta talked about, having to perform homosexual acts on Jewish producers.
Did he talk about it in the first person as that he had done it himself?
He talked about that was sort of the entree, and that when he was a child. This goes on both sexes, being heterosexual and homosexual, and it is a very, very corrupt culture. And but again, by people like Weinberg, it's not just having sex. I mean, you want to have sex, you can hire a prostitute or something like that. This is about power over a woman, being able to debase her, to just come up to her, with not having even met her before, and say, I want sex right now. I want a blowjob or something. And the woman being willing to do it. If she's not, you coerce her, you cajole her, you tell her that you're not going to get a part or something. And that's power. So a lot of women, a lot of people, they all go along with it. Mm-hmm. Because that's their career. Even some of the women who came out in the big article that came out yesterday, they're talking about that after this happened, they actually continued to have a relationship with Harvey Weinstein, that they tried to, paper it over. They would feel, humiliated. They feel horrible about themselves, but they thought, hey, if I'm going to have a career, I'm going to do it. Other women sort of got out of the film business because they, it's just like, it wasn't worth it. They had enough honesty to do that. But it's a very, very corrupt system. And in a way, that's the way the whole thing works now. I mean, if you're going to, become a politician, if you're going to, get involved with the media and everything, you have to sort of kowtow to these powerful, rich Jews. And it's not like you have to have sex with them, I don't think, but it's a matter of having to, basically humiliate yourself to this power.
Yeah, and it is so humiliating. I think of the 2008 vice presidential debate between Joe Biden and Sarah Palin. And of course, they were fighting with each other about everything, except when it came to Israel. And Sarah Palin, she said, I'm so glad that Senator Biden loves Israel as much as I do.
Yeah. It's an absolute consensus among the political class. You can't stray outside that. And if you do, all kinds of bad things will happen. So there's not one congressperson now. I mean, someone like Cynthia McKinney, who's a black at a safe district in down south, she did it. And there are probably a few others. But, hey, it's just pretty much the end of the world if you do that. So These people understand how the power works, and they give in. In doing so, they are prostituting themselves. They're humiliating themselves. And so you have to figure that every one of our congressmen, senators, is basically a prostitute because they give in on that. And they understand, as any common sense person would, that supporting Israel and everything is not in our interest. And all these disastrous wars that the Israel lobby has fomented, it's just trillions of dollars, thousands of lives. I mean, it's a disaster.
Yeah. And so it's in Hollywood. It's certainly not. Everybody knows it's not just Harvey Weinstein. Dr. Duke, the past few days, has played an excerpt from a movie called Trumbo, a major Hollywood movie called Trumbo, about how communists in Hollywood were victimized during the McCarthy era. But there is a scene in there where they deal with this, that there is a female reporter, and she's confronting Meyer of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, pointing out that he's just a Jew from some shtetl in Russia, and he's done all these great things for the country, and what does he do? You know, he's gets all these women on the casting couch, and she talks about having been on the casting couch and how he wanted to do her, and you know, it's been a stereotype for probably going on a century now. I mean, it certainly goes back to the 30s or maybe even past there, and it's in academia. It's everywhere. Well,
I recall reading a review of a book about Hollywood, and it mentioned the casting couch, and the person reviewing the book was Jewish, and it was sort of like, oh, boys will be boys. You know? That was the attitude. It's sort of like, yeah, you know, that's the way it goes. I don't think that attitude would fly in public now, but it's been going on behind the scenes, and it's never stopped. I'm sure it's still going on, and I'm sure Harvey Weinstein is not the only one. Everybody knows it's way more than that, and it's a complete lie that people like Meryl Streep would say, well, I didn't know. It's hard to believe that, very, very hard to believe that. Everybody knows that. Actress came on there and said, the first thing people told me when I was going to audition with the Weinstein Company is, you know, Harvey Weinstein is a predator. They just told her that. Everybody knew it. But now there's all this sanctimonious, oh, I didn't know. It'll continue, and that's the thing. It probably will continue, but it would be nice. I mean, it would be a real breakthrough, I think, if people – I'm not talking about the average person, but if people who are sort of in the know start to really see this as part of a very corrupt culture that is basically a Jewish culture.
Yeah.
And start to think about the whole thing.
And a Jewish culture.
It's
Sean Hannity's going to be painting it as liberal culture, but this is Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah. How many times have you heard people like Rush Limbaugh? Oh, how's Hollywood liberals? It's more than Hollywood liberals. It's Hollywood Jews. And they created a culture there. And if you don't get on board with that culture, you will not get movie parts. And then, you know, even if you're a big star, you come out as conservative, it can hurt your career. That's the reality. I'm hoping that this kind of thing does put people over the top a little bit. They won't talk about it, but they'll start thinking about it. They'll realize that, you know, this is, Hollywood is more than just Harvey Weinstein. It's a whole subculture. And it's really the same culture that we have in the big media, in the political culture in general, that people are having to kowtow to Jewish interests, whether it's Israel, and whether what they want in immigration and then all these other things that their policy positions, that's essentially what you have to do to get ahead in our society now. They are the elite, and they are going to they're very ruthless in reinforcing their power and preventing people from dissent from that from getting into positions.
And as you pointed out better than anyone, they are a hostile elite. They are hostile.
They are a hostile elite.
The interest
it works that way in the academic world. You're not going to get a job. You're not going to get tenure if you come out in any way against all these basic ideas that form the intellectual consensus that we have. So anybody who goes into academia must already have those ideas, must really sincerely believe them, or they must have to just suck it up and do self-censoring for the rest of their lives. It's a very sad situation, but we're living in a time when free speech is really not the case. We have the First Amendment, but there's all kinds of informal ways that people are punished, whether it's job loss, ostracism, that sort of thing. And so that's the way it works. And Harvey Weinstein was just one of many elite Jews who will prevent people from getting jobs if they're not on board, in his case, with the sexual agenda, but also with politics. I mean, he was very staunch liberal, big contributor to the Simon Wiesenthal Center, big contributor to Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. He, bundled millions of dollars for these people. So this is the culture right now. It's symptomatic of a very much wider phenomenon.
And hopefully this will help wake up more people. We are seeing signs of awakening, whether it's Trump's election or the response to the NFL. I'd like to switch gears here for a second. Last time we spoke, we talked about the prehistory of the European people, their Ice Age hunter-gatherer ancestors, other ancestors, farmers from the Middle East, or pastoralists from Central Asia, who I guess would be the Indo-Europeans. Are there any new developments that you've come across this past year you'd like to report on?
Well, I just finished a long paper on European family structure from an evolutionary perspective. And basically, the picture that I am trying to present, quite a bit of the previous research is based on what's called the Hajnal line, separating basically Western Europe from Eastern Europe, with all the exception of Ireland, southern Spain, southern Italy. But what I've been finding and arguing for now is that there's still a cline within Europe from north to south. A very important cline, I think, is ultimately genetically influenced. And people in the north are more attracted to individualism, and people in the south less so. So in France, for example, big divisions between north and south of France. This has been there forever. It's been commented on. There's a line from St. Malo, which I think is in Normandy or someplace, to Basel in Switzerland. And the south and north of France are just very different. And it's the north that has had all the energy, all the entrepreneurship, and all the flowering of French culture. And in general, it's been the north that has produced all this. So there's a big difference within Europe. But there are others, like, for example, northern Italy, which was settled by the Lombards, the Germanic people. That is another very, it's very much of a, it's part of the individualist families, really. But southern Italy, not. So I think this in southern Italy may have also been affected by the Muslims back in the Middle Ages and so on. But the point is that European individualism is a genetic phenomenon. And in the north, you have a confluence of the Indo-European genetic influence and the hunter-gatherer influence from the north. And I think that is really the basis of what we think of as Western European civilization. It never would have come out of these other areas that were predominantly from these Middle Eastern parts.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said just a second ago something about Ireland, southern Spain, southern Italy as being exceptions or outliers to something. What are you referring to, and would this have anything to do with the stereotypical attraction between Irish Americans and Italian Americans who are so often Sicilian?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying Ireland isn't individualistic, but their family patterns were more collectivist. They had more of a sense of a sort of a tribal territory that it lasted well into the Middle Ages, long after Western Europe went much more individualistic direction. So it's seen as an outlier within the Western European family structure, and of course there are genetic differences there. It's more of a Celtic group. So in southern Europe, like southern France, you tend to have early marriage. You tend to have much more of a collectivist structure where you have these patrilineal families that are basic unit of social life. Families have much more influence. Individuals, not very much. People sort of fit within the collective culture of the family. Whereas in the North, it's much more individualistic. People married late. Their whole sexual life, marriage, and so on was up to them. Whereas in the South, it was much more arranged by the family. And that's triple. You know, the extreme would be in the Middle East. Compared to the Middle East, all Europeans are individualistic. East is just rabidly.
Well, we are going to our last break. We will be back in just a minute with more from Kevin MacDonald.
American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
And welcome back to the show. These are our last few minutes, but Professor MacDonald, we mentioned briefly the NFL, and in the past you've talked about activities that are implicitly white. I guess country music would be implicitly white, and NASCAR. Now, the NFL, it's just full of black players, but a lot of white fans. Is the national anthem and the flag, are these emerging as icons of implicit whiteness?
I think they are, and I think the NFL dust up is really what that's about. You know, that you have a huge majority, I think, of white people in this country, whether they're misguided or not, they are still patriotic. They, when they look at the flag and they sing the national anthem, they respect that, and it's part of respecting our history and our culture and everything else. And when you see these black players and so many people on the left cheering them on, it really is a wake up call. And even though the NFL is 80% black players probably, or 70%. If you look in the stands, it is a white subculture. I mean, it's a huge percentage of fans are white, much more than the percentage of the population. And, it is a huge, places like where I'm from, Wisconsin, they shut down on Sundays when the Packers are playing. You can't even find anybody on the street. It's a huge thing. And so when Trump insists on this, I think he's going to win. This is a fundamental culture war. And I think a lot of Trump's base, so many things have gone wrong and his legislative agenda is stuck in the mud, but, he's still getting a lot of support from people on these fundamental cultural issues like the flag and the national anthem and I think immigration as well.
Mm-hmm. And you say Wisconsin, there's the University of Wisconsin, they have a big football team. And a lot of these big football teams, some of the athletes are saying, we're professionals. We're not getting paid. This is like slavery. Yeah. How about, this is an idea, how about just banning athletic scholarships?
That would be something. That would be great. What's really outrageous is professional black players are making $5-10 million a year or more. Are saying they are like slaves. The whole thing's a plantation system. Regis. I mean, they can quit anytime they want. I mean, please. And the NFL is a private corporation. They have there's no requirement that they have to respect the free speech of their players.
Especially while they're on the job. Especially while they're on the job.
Yeah, exactly. When I was at Cal State Long Beach, I was not free to say anything I wanted in the classroom. Despite tenure, despite academic freedom, I had to stick to the course material. And if I strayed from that, I could be fired. I was well aware of that. People on the left don't have to worry about that. Of course, they ramble all they want about their political ideas, and nobody will care. The administration will like it. Probably you'll get tenure. They'll people promoted for doing that. But if you have ideas like mine, forget about it. You can't mention it. Unless it's directly relevant to the course material. So I could talk about IQ, that was relevant, but I couldn't talk about Jewish influence.
Yeah. Well, that is the end of our time. It's been great having you, Professor McDonald. I hope you will be willing to come back again sometime soon.
Certainly. Happy to talk to you.
Okay. And we will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. In the meantime, go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button at the top and send a few shekels to keep this project alive.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Truth, truth.